the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the wealth advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Yes, and we welcome you back. Back to the program, the Tuesday edition of the Bucket Strategy Investing Show. I'm Johnny Dean, our professor Rick Plum, here with me from Lucia Capital Group, as always. Now, we're going to talk first up this hour. It's a busy day, of course, because today is Tuesday, and we've got just things jam-packed. We're going to talk first up about the various college savings plans that are available to you. We do get questions on this quite a bit, and I'm not talking about just the plans themselves. You got 529s, you got Coverdales and all that stuff, but also some of the ways to help pay for college. Now, that's either through grants or there are tax credits, some combination of the two. This is for both the students and the parents. You know, there's no real need to go broke just so your kid can spend every weekend playing beer pong. We're going to tell you what you need to know about saving for college coming up. I don't know. What is beer pong?
It's a drinking game.
Isn't that where they throw ball?
The Red Solo. What made Red Solo cups even more famous than they already were for, you know, the keg parties?
That's what it is. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, anyway,
throwing the ping pong balls into them.
We didn't have that when I went to school.
They didn't have plastic then either.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to get a visit as well from Steve Allendorf. Steve's our loan financial planner, and we're going to be talking with Steve about the latest mortgage loan rates. Now, I was told they were down just a little bit this week. Good news, right? I think we raised rates in December. What happens in January? We'll also talk about understanding your adjustable rate loan, how it's going to change with those adjustable rates and all that stuff. So we'll talk with Steve Allendorf about that. Now, you got money questions? Yes, you do. You just give us a call right now, 877-PLANNER. That's 877-752-6637. We'll answer them for you right here on the show. Send us your emails at our website, wealthed.com, where you see the Find Your Answer link at the top part of the page. Click, ask your question, type, and send it in to us. Professor Rick Plum, back with me once again, courtesy of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Having the financial knowledge you need to get yourself through retirement is one of the keys to having a successful retirement. Imagine that. Brain Trust advisors at Lucia Capital Group, they're here to help you out with your own retirement strategy. That's why they bring you this hour of the program. You want to talk to an advisor off the air, you just give them a call, 800-644-1150. You know this. Everyone has unique goals, unique needs. And if you give the Brain Trust advisors a call today, right now, they'll put a personalized bucket strategy together for you. That's right. Their number, once again, off air, 800-644-1150. And our number on the air, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. People get scared, Professor Plum, when they get you do nothing but read about college saving and how important college is. And your kid will never succeed. And everybody knows the type of parents that are out there today. Not you watching or listening. You know who I'm talking about, though.
Well, and it's not just parents. It's grandparents, too, pushing for it.
They're all pushing for it because
many grandparents are the ones that are going to be picking up the tab for it.
Exactly. Because little Megan or little Taylor or whatever his name is has to succeed. He's got to be the best. So they have to send him to school. But at the same time, they're looking at the cost of college and you're saying, wait a minute now. I mean, it could be just for a state school. In-state could be, you know, still $20,000-$25,000 a year,
well,
depending.
And depending upon where in the state they go, you got to pay for your room and board. That's where a big, big portion of the cost comes in. And as I mentioned, it's not just the parents, because the reality is most parents have a very hard time saving for college education because they're busy paying the bills in their 30s and 40s, maybe busy saving for retirement, which I do believe is the first thing you do once you start saving. You don't save for education first. So a lot of this does come down to the grandparents saving. And not only are you trying to save for your own retirement, but you're looking, you know, your kids are getting married, you're becoming grandparents, and you're saying, I want them to have the opportunities that, you know, that I don't see the kids having the ability to pay for it. So you got two sets of generations basically potentially wanting to save for college education. And both of them are at the detriment to their own retirement in many respects. So that's a key issue. What do you save for first?
Well, yeah, and I've heard the saying, and I'm sure you've, maybe you said it, I don't know, where you can borrow for, you know, to pay for education.
But you can't borrow for retirement.
For retirement, or at least you can't borrow for retirement and stay alive very long, let's put it that way.
Well, I mean, and but you can borrow for retirement, it's called a reverse mortgage, if you own a house that has equity in it, enough equity to be able to borrow.
Yeah, and who says that you do?
Not, a lot of people are having less of an opportunity there than, from before.
Right.
But it's all about prioritizing and figuring out. But then how do you go about doing it?
Yeah, how do you go about doing it? So you got two things going on. You have the saving part, which is really a daunting task. You know, when you think about it, because you have young families often, you know, they're raising kids. They're maybe in their late 20s, early 30s, mm-hmm. and going along and just trying to make sure that they got the house. They got the, you know, the regular expenses for the kids. And they're still in their early earning years, and so they're probably not making a ton of money in most cases.
And every kid now is part of at least one, maybe more, extracurricular activities that cost money, and so you're paying for that out of pocket. You're trying to buy the house that's in a good neighborhood near the good school, so you may have not, maybe you don't have to send them to a private school, and so you're pretty tapped out. I mean, when it comes to ongoing cash flow, and maybe you're doing the full amount to your 401k, or at least the matching portion of the 401k, and then you say,
what's left?
What do I do next? Well, unfortunately, that's the problem for a lot of people that are looking at education savings. Because just like retirement, it takes doing something out of your own pocket. Now, the difference between retirement and education is that if you haven't saved enough, when you do get out to the point for education savings, or for education spending, I should say, there may be some, not enough to cover it all, but there is a little bit of help through different credits and other things. But it's not going to be able to send your kid to Stanford. Well, first off, they've got to be able to qualify for it, but
Well, but you don't even have to be. I mean, there are schools where you'd like to send your kids. I even mentioned I know some of the state schools near where I live. I mean, it's not as much as, you know, a private Loyola Marymount or something like that. But at the same time, you know, even 12 grand a year, 15 grand a year for college is an expense.
It's a bite.
It's a bite. I mean, it's taking a big hit. It's like if you make 60, 70 grand a year, you know, that's a
20%
whatever, 20%. That's like a 20% in cut in pay in some ways.
And that's why it's important when you're younger to start building the savings discipline. Even if it's not education savings, you start building the savings discipline and start, instead of the 10% number, start saving that 20% number if you can figure out how to do it. And you're putting the full amount, the $18,000 a year into your 401k. You're used to putting money away. Build the savings discipline. Worst case scenario is that you get out to where the kids are 18, 19 and they go to school. You've been saving $18,000 a year into your 401k. You've built up a nest egg for your retirement. You can let that continue to potentially grow, back away from the ongoing savings and redirect and use $12,000 or $13,000 of that to help pay for that state school. And hope for some scholarships along the way.
That would be nice. Now, we should mention the basics, too. 529 plans, Coverdell savings. I mean, those are probably not as big as 529s just because of the amounts involved.
Right, but, and that's the problem because the maximum that you can put into a Coverdell savings account. Now, the advantage of a Coverdell education savings account is that you're not restricted to what the state offers to the specific account. And if you wanted to buy stocks, you can open a brokerage account, ETFs, mutual funds, almost any mutual fund. You can buy them inside of a Coverdell education savings account. But the problem is the maximum contribution per child is $2,000 from all sources, whether you're putting it in, grandparents are putting it in, aunts and uncles.
It's been that way for years and years and years.
$2,000. $2,000 a year for 18 years, if you start when the child is, you know, first born, it's not going to build up enough to go to one of the more expensive type schools unless you are really good, or I should say really lucky with your investing. So most people are moving more towards the 529 plans, which allow for a much higher contribution limit. And so they can put in a bunch of money and maybe get enough of it in there to fund the majority of the education. In either case, the potential earnings that are created by the investments within the accounts grow, they both grow tax deferred, and then if withdrawn for qualified higher education expenses, they're tax free. So the advantage of these types of accounts are the tax free potential distribution for education, whether it's from the Coverdell or from the 529.
Yeah.
Now, one of the advantages of the Coverdell is you can take it out before post-secondary, before college,
for certain expenses.
But the reality is that doesn't help you that much, because if you put it in today and you take it out in 2 or 3 years, you haven't had much time to have any real growth on it. And so you're not really getting a lot of tax benefit from it because it didn't grow that much. It didn't have time.
And you may have put it at risk, too, but, you know,
you may have lost it.
Yeah, you never know. Okay, so very quickly, we only got a minute. 529 plans, and we'll cover more of these after the bottom of the hour, too. 529 plans, every state has one.
Every state has at least one.
Yeah.
And they come in a couple of flavors. One is a savings plan, saving investment plan, where you can pick different investments. The other is a prepaid tuition plan, where you're basically buying units of education at today's price or a little marked up from today's price. And so you do have to look at that markup. But you're basically banking units. You need to have 128 units or something to graduate. You're buying them in today's price. And if they grow, if education costs grow a lot, you've already got them. You're trading in those units to pay for the future.
Yeah, they're like vouchers that are good for whatever. Yeah. They're like forever stamps.
Yes.
In some ways. Until
it's a good way to look at it.
Yeah, well, you got to look at it. Always look on the bright side of life. That's our motto. Okay, we're going to excuse Professor Rick Plum for just a segment. He's going to come back after the bottom of the hour. We got Steve Allendorf, our loan financial planner, who's here every Tuesday at this time talking about these adjustable rate mortgages. We'll find out how mortgage rates are doing. That's all coming up next on the Bucket Strategy Investing Program. Time, so much to know. We're going to get right into it with our loan financial planner, Steve Allendorf, who joins me once again here on Bucket Strategy Investing every Tuesday at this time, or most every Tuesday. If you want to talk to Steve off the air or talk to him personally, whatever, there are a couple of ways you can get in touch with him. It's at loan, L-O-A-N, financialplanner.com, loanfinancialplanner.com, or you can call him 888-563-1070. I'll remind you what those numbers and websites are toward the end of this segment. Steve, thanks for joining us once again.
Always a pleasure, Don.
Okay, so we saw the rate increase in December.
Correct.
The world didn't fall apart.
No, so what happened to mortgage rates? Because remember, the rate increase was the short-term rates.
Yes.
So it's been 8 years since the Feds have made the increase. Prior to that, we had some increases. And so when people ask, when the Feds make the move, do rates go up or do rates go down? Well, sometimes they go up. And sometimes they go down.
Just like the market.
I mean, nobody has a crystal ball.
No.
So when the Feds made their move, long-term rates, 30-year fixed rates, even like the 7-year fixed rate, they moved up a little bit. But in the last week or two, we've seen a nice little decrease in the rates. So the rates are either the same or maybe even a little bit better for mortgages than they were before the Feds increased the short-term rates. So, I mean, let's go over some of the rates. And again, for people to be aware, because they're going to hear all kinds of advertising on the radio with mortgage rates. And when you hear those mortgage rates being advertised on the radio, it's for generally a select and sometimes very narrow range of client, whether they're advertising rates with 40% equity or on a purchase or with credit scores at 780, no cash out. They can advertise a rate, but that may not be your rate. So 30-year fixed rates, anywhere with minimal points or no points, between, let's say, 3.8 and 4.25.
So you can still get 3.8 on a 30-year fixed.
3.8 on a 30-year fixed rate. A 15-year loan, you're looking in the low threes, 3.1 up to 3.5. 7-year, which is, again, I think a great product.
I love that. If you're not going to be in your home for the next 15 years or whatever.
And for those people that are on adjustables, and we're going to talk about that if we have enough time.
Yes.
If you're uncomfortable just with the idea that you have an adjustable, you're used to having an adjustable, why not do a 7-year fix? So you get that comfort zone for 7 years, and you may get a rate that's a half a point lower than a 30-year. So a 7-year, anywhere between 3.3 and 3.8. The jumbo loans, 30-year at 3.7.
Still
I've seen
really
as low
good.
As 3.7.
Yep.
The 7-year jumbo is even lower than the conventional jumbo. I've seen them as low as 3.1. FHA and VA between 3.3 and 3.7. So those are great products.
That's a 30-year we're talking about.
Correct.
3.3.
Like I said last week, the government loans have not gone up at all.
3 3/8. So, I mean, for 30 years.
Unbelievable.
Okay.
Unbelievable.
Still. All right.
And then a program that we haven't talked about for a long time are the interest only. So I've got one lender, 7-year interest only on a purchase or a refinance. anywhere between maybe 3.3 and 3.5%.
Is there a reason now to do an interest only? Because I see you could also get that 7 year at about 3 3/8.
Sure, it's the flexibility of an interest only loan, mm-hmm. because an interest only loan will give you a significantly lower payment because you're only paying interest. Mm-hmm. So you get the full benefit of the percent tax deduction mm-hmm. on the payment. So you know when you're able to write off your interest, you're able to write off your interest, not your total mortgage yeah. payment. So you get a better ratio of what you can write off. And for those people who have fluctuating income, the beauty of an interest-only loan is that you can have a lower payment. Let's even say that you have a lot of rental properties. You can have a lower payment, something yeah. happens to one of the rental properties, you're not taxed as far as being able to make the payment. But let's say that you have some really good months and you make principal reduction payments.
Which is probably a good idea.
On an interest-only
yeah,
loan.
Exactly.
It's the only yeah. loan that when you make a principal reduction payment the following month, your required payment goes down.
Well, sure, because the interest is based on the
on
balance.
On the current balance.
Yes, and by the way, it'll help you when you got to make those higher payments later on once the interest-only period
expires. Correct, so it gives you the opportunity, let's say if you do a 7 year, that in your six years, 6 months before it's going to change, if your rate's still good and you don't want to refinance, you also have the ability to pay down the mortgage to design your loan for the remaining term. And the one lender that I like to use on the interest only has both a 30 and a 40-year loan. So if you have a 7 year, on a 30-year, you've got 23 years remaining that will become fully amortized. But if you do the 40-year loan,
it's less of a...
then you're 33 years amortized. And that payment, even at a higher rate today, may be the same, if not maybe just slightly higher, than doing a 30-year
right.
fixed today. At a lower interest rate.
See, and you're right on the flexibility. I like that too, because if I had one, I might treat it as just a regular pay the principal, but on the months where I can't or don't need to or don't want to for whatever reason, I have the flexibility of not paying that. And you save yourself a couple $100 depending on the size of the loan.
The key, if you're willing to take a look at it, is also to be educated by the loan mm-hmm. Person that's going over the loan with you to show you how you can manage that loan. That's where you get into the loan financial planning, how to take advantage of that lower interest.
So believe me, you need it. Believe me, because this is a lot of money here.
Well, yeah, so you've got the tax deductibility, then you can take that savings, and if you invest that savings and you get a 3-5% return on your investment, let's say you have a rate at 3.5%, you're in the 30-40% tax bracket, the cost of that money is probably only 2-2.5%. So you can set yourself up over a 7 year period of time by having significantly more money put away by managing the mortgage.
You could. Now, of course, that investment side is never guaranteed. I should mention that. So there is some risk to that. But at the same time, hey, it could work out.
Absolutely.
Now, talk for just a moment, because I've only got a few minutes, some of the reasons you might want to refinance or not.
Well, let's assume, you know, you're concerned because the adjustable rates have gone up,
yeah.
But you haven't had that change yet on your mortgage. From a year ago today, we're looking at probably 0.3 to a half a point difference in interest rate. So if you have, let's say, a $300,000 loan, and you have, let's say, 23 years remaining on it, you're only going to notice a difference of about $84 to $85 in your payment. So I wouldn't sweat too bad as far as, oh my God, my rate's going to now change. Yeah. What's it going to go to? Now, could you refinance into a fixed rate loan or a 7 year loan? Yeah, you can. And it might be a little bit higher rate than what your loan's going to adjust to on your adjustable. But let's say your value's increased on your home, if you've got an equity line or credit cards now that you can potentially merge into a 30-year loan or even a fixed for 7 years, we may be able to show you how you can reduce your monthly outgo by $200, $300, $400, $500, $600 a month and then figure out how to make that money work for you over the next 7 or 30 years.
Yeah, and now you're talking about the importance of having somebody, just like when we talk about financial planning, have an advisor, somebody who's seen all the scenarios, do this for you, as opposed to just trying to do this yourself.
Yeah, that's real important. You know, your mortgage is probably your biggest debt, and yet in most cases people do a mortgage and they forget about it, not realizing that they can potentially manage the mortgage and manage that debt, or a combination of the mortgage and any of the other debt they have more effectively.
Yeah, because you're talking, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, and over the course of many months or years or whatever, it can add up, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've had tons of clients where I've gone through this, and after a 5-7 year period of time, when I get a call back from them, they tell me, hey, I'm in so much of a better position. Thanks so much for taking the time to explain how to manage it. That's what makes my job worthwhile.
Well, thank you for taking the time. We'll see you again next week. If you need Steve Allendorf off the air, once again, loan, L-O-A-N, financialplanner.com or 888-563-1070. Steve, thanks again. We'll talk to you next week.
Always a pleasure.
Take care. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum returns when we come back on Buckett Strategy Investing. Strategy Investing, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, taking your phone calls. Still have a couple of lines open, so get on board right now. Ask your money question. Doesn't matter what it is. Any money issue that you have, we're here, as we have been every day for years and years and years. And I mean that. Since the early 90s, we've been doing this program. How old does that make us? But we're here doing this for you once again today. So give us a call while the lines are open, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. And by the way, speaking of answering your questions, we're going to be doing more of that this afternoon and every Tuesday afternoon. It's the Social Security Show with me, Johnny Dean, and Professor Rick Plum. We team up once again every week, 1 o'clock Pacific, 4 o'clock Eastern time, and it's only at wealtheds.com, W-E-A-L-T-H, wealtheds.com. At that time, it's only about a half hour, in fact, a little bit less than a half hour, and we cram all kinds of information about strategy, about Social Security rules, answering your questions, new laws, changes, whatever it is. Believe me, there are dozens, and if not maybe 100 different aspects to Social Security. You don't have to know them. You just have to know the ones that affect you. So watch that every Tuesday, today included, 1 o'clock Pacific, 4 o'clock Eastern time, only at wealtheds.com. All right, we have more to say on college savings, but we're going to take a couple of calls. 877-PLANNER, our number, two lines open, 877-752-6637. Back to the phones. Joan is next in Chaska, Minnesota. Hello, Joan. How can we help you today?
Yes. I have some double E bonds that are coming due, and I would like to pay for my I'm a grandparent, and I'd like to pay for my grandchildren's education. And I'm wondering if there's any way I can do that, get any kind of a tax advantage or?
Unfortunately, no.
Double
E bonds can be used on a tax-free basis if they're being used for you, your spouse, or a dependent child of yours. And mm-hmm. and also the bond had to have been purchased after 1989. So if what you're saying is they're coming due because they're coming to their final maturity at 30 years,
right.
Then they were purchased in 86, which made them ineligible for the tax exclusion anyway. So unfortunately,
and you can't change names, change the transfer the.
Well, is there anybody else's name on the bond right now?
I think I might have one. I'd have to look it up. That's mine and my son's, and it's his kids. Would that work?
Well, no, because they were purchased too early. But if the person's name, if you have somebody, a co-owner on it, you can take your name off of it without incurring a tax at this point. Obviously, they'll incur the tax at some other point. But to change names midstream, if you were to take your name off it and put somebody else's name on it, then you get to pay the taxes up to the point in time where you change the names. And as mentioned, your bonds were purchased in 1986, which makes them ineligible for the education savings portion of it anyway. So there's really no way to get out of the taxes. We can't even roll them over to double H bonds anymore. That stopped a couple of years ago. They stopped issuing new double H bonds to allow for a tax, basically tax-deferred exchange of an E or a double E bond into a double H bond. So unfortunately, at the end of the 30-year period of time, you're just going to want to cash it in, pay the piper, and go from there, because at that point, they stop earning interest.
Okay. How about some of the newer ones? And I've got one that's in both our names, and I'm not sure if it's, I think it's a newer one. If it was, I could take my name off it, pay the taxes up to that time.
Well, as long as the other person is on the bond, your son, the parent is on the bond, you should be able to pull your name off without paying the taxes. Now it's just his bond by himself.
I'll have to look into that one maybe.
And as long as he was at least 24 years of age when the bond was purchased, he didn't have kids at a very, 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 very early age.
No.
But as long as he was 24 years of age at the time the bond was purchased, then it'll be okay. And as long as it was purchased after 1989.
Okay, and that would be my only chance.
And it would only be on that particular bond.
Right, yeah. Okay, well, thanks for your info.
No problem.
Thank you, Joan, for the call.
Thought this was easy, didn't you?
Who, me? No.
Savings bonds just have not been that attractive an investment lately. For a while, they were paying reasonable amounts of interest.
For a while, like when?
Well, you know, back in the 80s and the 90s,
right,
they were
exactly.
paying 6-7%.
Sure.
On a guaranteed tax-deferred basis, that was pretty attractive. And then being able to potentially use, especially bonds purchased in 1990 and later, to be able to exclude the income from taxation for education, as long as you lived up to the rest of the rules, that was a fairly attractive issue. But if you were to buy a bond today, a double E savings bond, you know what you're earning on that bond today?
Tell me. I don't know.
0.1%.
0.1. That's 0.1%.
And you will earn that for 19 years and 11 months. Now, in the 20th, the final month of the 20th year, you will get a really big increase in value. You'll get a huge increase.
Will it double or triple?
It has to double by that point.
Yeah, so now you're going to get what?
Well, let's say it was a $1,000 bond. You paid $500 for it today.
It's now worth?
It's worth about $550 19 years from now. I don't have the exact number.
Yeah.
But on that last day of the 20th year, on the 20th anniversary, it jumps up to $1,000. It goes from like, you know, $550, $600.
Right, so and it gets a 450%.
So if you're close to the 20-year mark on those these newer bonds, I mean, so now we haven't gotten close to those yet. These newer bonds are obviously nowhere near 20 years old, but you don't want to cash them in the 18th, 19th, 20th, you know, after the 20th year, fine. But
they'll still continue to pay after the 20th year.
Yeah, at whatever the interest rate is at that time.
And will that, whatever interest rate is at that time, it keeps paying that same interest? Or I forget because it's been so long.
It'll pick up the market interest rate going forward.
So whatever, as interest rates go up and down, it'll continue.
I think they'll lock it in for another for the remaining 10 years.
Okay,
of its
so that's
life.
What I'm wondering. It does lock in. I can't remember. Like I said, it's been so long since I did that. But I still have some bonds from the early 90s. So I'm you know, I think it was paying 4% or something like that.
Yeah, and they are. A lot of them that were issued in the early 90s, they had a maturity. They had two. There's two maturities in a mm-hmm. savings bond. The initial maturity, because a savings bond, a double E bond, is bought at half the face amount. So like I mentioned earlier, a $1,000 bond, you would pay $500 for it. And the initial maturity is when the cash value of it equals the face amount of it. And so the bonds purchased back in the 90s had a guarantee to double in 12 years, X number of years. And so they had a reasonable rate of interest at that point. Some of them were guaranteed to double sooner than that, but those are getting old now. They're probably ones better. And then they picked up the then market rate from that point forward, and many of them are still earning 4% because that's what the then market rate was, 4%.
Mm-hmm.
And so now those are coming to an end.
Well,
they're hitting
what,
30-year mark, and no bond, no savings bond earns interest for more than 30 years. They used to, back in the 60s when they were issued, earn for 40 years, but all of those have been gone for a long time. Now they're 30-year bonds, and they are deferred. And I kind of overstated my cash value on that $500 growing at 0.1% for 20 years.
It was still too much?
$550 was too high.
I wondered.
It's going to go, if you're
from
$510, you will have earned
$10
and
over
10
19
cents
years.
Over 19 years, 11 months. And the last year, the last month it doubles to get to that 20-year anniversary doubling.
And, you know, people love low interest rates. And
not for this sport, they don't.
No, they don't. I mean, you know, people only want to pay 0% or 0.9 on whatever
paying
they buy.
But low interest rates, but, good.
But they miss, you forget, you know, remember 5% CDs? I mean, you remember those.
I remember those, yeah.
Yeah, 6% CDs, and those seemed like the norm.
And they seemed low at one point.
Well, they kind of did. When the 10-year dipped into the 4-point-something, I thought, wow, 4.5% over 10 years, 4.8, who would do that?
Now, we were talking about double E savings bonds, which are fixed interest-bearing accounts.
Yes.
We were not talking about the inflation bond, the Series I savings bond, which has two components to the interest rate. One is a fixed core rate that it pays for the period of time that you own the bond. It's fixed at issue. And then an inflation-adjusted rate that goes up or down based on inflation. You know how much those are paying right now? Well, if you bought it in the last couple of years, those are paying less than 0.1. They're paying zero. Nada, zilch. And even the ones that were paying that have a core rate of 3.6%. The ones that were originally issued back in 1989, 1990, and 1991 had a core rate, a fixed interest rate of 3.6, 3.4%, depending on when you bought them. The inflation factor this year, this last go-round, was a negative number. So it's even reduced that number. They're only earning like 2.5% on those. But those are the best ones. And they're only going to earn interest for another couple of years because they're 30-year bonds as well.
Those were around in the late 1980s, the I-bonds?
I'm trying to remember when they came in. It might have been 1998.
I was thinking it was the late
90s. 98, that's right. Yeah. 98, not 89, 98.
Yeah, because I think the interest rate, the core interest rate was probably a little bit higher.
98 was 3.4, 99 was 3.6, 2000 was 3.6, 3.4.
Everybody's talking about how great they were.
They were.
The time.
And I was called a cynic because I said that, well, as soon as people get excited about these, they're going to drop the core rate. And guess what the core rate is now? Zero.
Well, they kept it pretty good for a few years.
Until about 2002. 2003,
and then they started,
and it's been under 1% on the core rate, and the core rate is important because obviously the inflation
that doesn't change.
The inflation factor changes based on CPI, and even though it's very low today, it may be higher in the future. So we can at least have an inflation protected interest going forward. It's that core rate that's the driving factor, though, because a zero core rate's a joke.
Well, there's no point to do it. I don't.
The 3.6 was good.
3.6 was good, but if you had it and you had what is it, a negative one
CPI
of 1%?
I'd have to look
it up. I don't
know
whatever it is. It's you're still getting less.
You're still getting 2.5% though. In today's world, that's a good rate of return.
Well, 2.5% over a year, right?
Over a year, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, 877 Planner. Got more stuff to talk about on college savings. Your phone calls and emails also just ahead. Don't go away. Bucket Strategy Investing, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. Hey, don't forget now, it's of course, what is this, mid-January. And you got a little bit, you got some time, but not a ton of time to sign up for the workshops. Now, the next workshop, or at least the first one, in the new spring series, 2016 Retirement Income Strategies, workshops put on by Lucia Capital Group, Saturday morning, February 20th. It's in Las Vegas, Nevada. If you're in Las Vegas, Henderson, anywhere in Clark County or the surrounding areas, you can come by. Just go to wealthed.com to sign up. It's free. Las Vegas, February 20th. Seattle, Washington happens February 27th. And Phoenix, AZ, March 12th. Yes, again, got some time, couple of months till Phoenix, but just keep it in the back of your mind. Or just go ahead and sign up, and we'll send you a reminder as it gets close. Once again, wealthed.com. Meet Professor Plum, meet Terry Keyes, and the local advisors there talking to you about your retirement and asking your money questions, as they do every single day we do right here on this program. Okay, 877-PLANNER. Again, that was wealthed.com. Our number, there's another hour coming up of the program, so if you can't get enough of us now, you can get more of us next hour. So let's cover this, Professor Plum. We haven't had enough time to get to this. There are ways to help you out if you're trying to pay for college.
Right. Once you get there, if you haven't saved enough, even if you have saved enough, if you're spending money on college, there are some credits potentially available to help lessen the sting,
yes, and
so
there's,
to speak.
And there's one that I really like, and it's called the American Opportunity Credit. Let's just talk about that for a few minutes.
Well, the American Opportunity Credit basically took the place of the HOPE Learning Credit from years past. And it is a credit of up to $2,500. Now, a credit is better than a deduction. A credit reduces the taxes you owe dollar for dollar. A deduction reduces your income, which is then subject to a tax rate. But a tax credit of $2,500 is a lot better than the tax deduction of $2,500. So the tax credit is for, basically it's 50% of the first $2,000 and 25% mm-hmm. of the next $2,000 of educational expenses you pay for college, post-secondary education. But it's only good for 4 years. You can't string it out forever. So unfortunately, if it takes you 6 years to get your classes, you can only take the American Opportunity Credit in 4 years, and you have to be pursuing a recognized degree in college. So once you exceed the 4 years, or once you've got your degree and you go towards your master's, this is not good for the master's. It's only good for working towards a bachelor's degree.
Now, I'm sorry, you said working toward a degree, a recognized degree. What is
recognized educational credential.
So like a bachelor, like a bachelor of arts, bachelor of science,
letter, whatever they call
okay,
them.
Yeah.
And so you've got to be, I mean, it can't just be, you know, taking underwater basket weaving like we always took in first couple years in college as our main elective. If that's your only class, then that's not a recognizable educational degree. At least I don't think it is. But as long as you're actually going for a purpose.
You have to be legitimately working toward a degree and not just taking a class that you can deduct whatever it is you're paying and get a whole bunch of money back is what
right.
you're saying.
And so you have to spend at least $4,000 to get the full credit. But if you are spending $4,000, and it's available for you, for your spouse, or for your dependent children if you're paying the expenses. And so you can reduce the taxes that you owe on your tax return. Now, if you don't have a lot of income and you don't end up owing any taxes, or you don't owe $2,500 worth of taxes, maybe you only owe $1,000 in taxes when it's all said and done. Now, when we talk about owing taxes, I'm not talking about April. I'm not talking about what the amount of money you write a check for in April. I'm talking about the annual tax liability. So if you want to know what that is, look at your tax return, find the line that says this is your total tax, and that's the potential that can be reduced. Now, if you don't have a very large tax bill due because of the other issues, maybe you still have younger children, you've got child tax credits from them bringing your income taxes down, you've been able to reduce your income taxes, you don't owe very much in taxes, a portion, up to $1,000 of the American Opportunity Credit is a refundable credit. The entire thing is not refundable, but $1,000 of the credit is refundable. So even if I don't owe any taxes, I had a year where I didn't owe anything, I can get $1,000 refund if I'm paying for education expenses. This happens for younger adults that are paying for their own schooling, where they work part of the year, they don't work part of the year, and they're taking loans out to live. And maybe they earn $10,000. They're not on mom and dad's dole anymore. They earn $10,000, and they take out student loans for another $5,000, $8,000, $10,000, and they paid $4,000 for expense. But if you only earn $10,000, $15,000, you don't owe very much in taxes. So you can't get a $2,500 refund, but you can get all the taxes wiped out and then get an extra $1,000 back as a refund, even if you didn't owe the tax. So it is a partially refundable credit. And so this is one that is very common, commonly being used for most people in their first 4 years of college.
So it's
now it's not for everybody.
No, it's not. Go ahead, because that's right where I was headed here.
If you are rich, if you're part of that evil, mean rich, probably about the top 5% of people in the incomes category, married couple making $160,000 or more, or a single individual making $80,000 or more, you lose the ability to take the American Opportunity Credit. So and it's phased out over a $30,000 range for a married couple, $15,000 range. I think it's 15. No, it's 10 and 20. I'm sorry. So from 160 to 180, you start losing the eligibility for a married couple filing a joint return. If you're making more than 180, now this is adjusted gross income. This is all the income on that front page of your tax return. If you're making more than that, you don't get the American Opportunity Credit. Single individual, 80 to 90. If you're making more than that, you don't get the American Opportunity Credit. It's not there for the evil, mean, rich people of the world the eyes of the IRS.
Is this true if a student is just paying for it on their own and they don't have the assets? I mean,
it's not asset-based, it's income-based.
Yeah, I don't mean that. Yes, I mean the income. So if a student is paying for the college themselves and they're making, 20, 30 grand, okay, even if the parents are making 160.
Right, unless the child is a dependent on the tax return.
Yes.
If you are a child and, you're going to school, but your parents are still claiming you as a dependent on their tax return, you cannot take the American Opportunity Credit. But if your parents are making $300,000-$500,000 a year and they can't get the American Opportunity Credit, they're probably not being able to take you as a dependent deduction anyway because of the alternative minimum tax and some other things that limit their ability to take you as a dependent on their return. So if you've got at least some amount of income, you should probably file your own return and claim at least the $1,000 refundable credit on your return and get some of the money back to help you pay for that college.
Yeah, it's nice. So it's $2,500 credit, and up to $1,000 of it can be what's called refundable,
right.
Meaning you can get even if you don't owe taxes. Now, if you were getting a refund anyway because a lot of you over withheld, it still gives you?
Well, the refund is not the issue. It's what was my total.
Yes, it's wiping out your tax. So if you paid $2,500 in taxes, but you're still getting a refund, I still get my refund.
Plus you get
the money back that you overpaid in taxes.
Right.
Okay. We're out of time. If you need the brain trust, off the air, Professor Plummer, any of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group, their number 800-644-1150. Another hour is just ahead. Stick around for more Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.